So there was a reference in that email exchange about, you know, tried the nihilistic approach. Don't want to go back and do that again.
Yes, right.
What is, like, is it nihilism? Like, what is it?
I don't know.
It's like, is it the epitome of fuck this?
I've never been able to figure it out.
I think hedonism a hell of a lot better than nihilism.
Hedonism I get. Nihilism, yeah. I'm not so sure.
Yeah, nihilism sounds like we wouldn't have much fun.
Did you see your loppers on the way in?
I did. I swear to
God. All right. Awesome.
Your what on the way in?
Loppers.
Oh, yeah.
Branch loppers.
Yeah, I did see them.
Those things are great. Chop, chop, gobble, gobble.
Yeah, they're good. Especially if you need to get someone to talk.
Oh, man. That's right.
Yeah.
10 digits? 9 digits?
That's right.
There's torture here, but a little persuasion never hurt anybody.
Sometimes you have to lose a digit or two to go far.
Maybe some of the immigrants from those troubled areas missing section of the digit.
Oh, my.
More than one, so it made me wonder what they went through. Or
yeah.
It was just a, you know, work accident.
I like what you said about it helps to have somebody that herds the cat somewhat.
Well, you know, where this goes, if everyone seeks attention as peers and isn't willing to lend their attention to the designated cat herder, then it just becomes a mishmash of opinions, of agreement or disagreement, or what happened to me, kind of like a Course in Miracles meeting. You know, people tell you about their miracles and what makes them so great and so winning. Others, you know, may not be so successful in their spiritual surrender. So there's envy, competition. Yeah.
You don't have an easy task in this respect because the intention is that it is more of a equal footing kind of group.
Yeah.
And the only way you can effectively do the role that you do is by basically having enough respect from the group that we're not going to just...
You can't... That's right. You can't soapbox at people.
No.
So, you know, if anyone is given and granted shared attention, non-competitive, right, non-agreement and disagreement, just the journey of shared attention, well, that, let's just say in New Age vocabulary, raises the vibration of the group, creates a salon where some solemnity can occur. There's nothing to prove or get right. There's certainly no advice to give or to get. And then you're like, wow, I mean, I give myself and get from myself advice all day long, which drives me, you know, insane. And I can't seem to stop it at will or any other way. So if you can, you know, contribute to and create an environment where the habit of mind and advice giving and getting is relaxed, well, boy, that's a gift. I mean, hearing about someone else's so-called spiritual experiences or unpleasant experiences that they've overcome by virtue of them being great or some magic of grace gets really tiresome after a while. Like, what about now? What about here? What about now? the typical common nature of interview, pedantry, you know, even inquiry, degrades into, you know, hypotheticalism. And I mean, I'm doing that, you know, all day, every day. Isn't it nice? I find it nice to have an environment in shared company where that's not happening. Or at least you don't need to define yourself according, right, to mental loops.
This isn't the life coach support group?
Yeah. Any life coach that had the cojones to hang out here would, you know, might find something valuable, but
it's interesting. I've been observing the meditation when it gets to the sharing part.
Yes.
How easily it can divert to commentary, like a journalist.
Yeah.
And just reporting on some interesting fact about Itzhak Perlman. And
sure.
And then a response back, and then all of a sudden it's like, I'd like to remind you why you're here, and it's an interesting conversation for another time.
There you go.
Direct personal experience sharing related to the practice.
Okay.
And you know, it's easily said, but not so easily done. Not that I'm the best example.
Of course.
I do try to find always a pointer back to direct experience. The energy is so clearly different. When it gets there, it's basically a cafe conversation. You know, and this what you achieve here and what I hope to achieve more often in that sharing aspect is people digging and revealing, you know, what it is that's being, you know, presented and uprooted in some way or revealed.
Yes.
That's a pretty, that's a vulnerable place.
Sure it is.
You know.
There's every pebble, every step, pun intended, you know, is a slippery slope into codependency, attention seeking, storytelling, evasion, right? Advice giving and getting. And that's how we're trained, right? That's the socialization that we go through in the family, in the school, in the professions, in the education, right? That's how we're trained. To be together, you know, in an aboriginal way, around the proverbial fire, is really just an invitation of, you know, what? Shared nourishment. One is invited to relax from the inertia of oneself. Intimacy is present without having an object or an agenda. Isn't it strange that intimacy is present without object or agenda? Woof. And one is invited, and you know, when it comes to, you know, quote, sharing in spiritual or whatever therapeutic circles, certainly in the 12-step right environment, anecdotal and personal story and observations or insights or suffering are, of course, you know, all welcome, so that everyone is safe, let's say, to express themselves as long as they are nonviolent, right, and non-triggering of others. And the great rule about no crosstalk then, right, permits you to be a listener in presence to someone else's, you know, suffering and recovery, And you can talk with them after the meeting if you feel moved to. But it doesn't become, you know, an advice-giving thing. Now, in this environment, you can say, take it a step further, if I can be so, you know, presumptuous, step further. Is that the invitation is the palpable presence of referencelessness. There's no emphasis on right trying to process the day, the week, the life, though of course those kinds of things will arise, and why shouldn't they? And they can be dealt with and responded to in a courteous manner. But the emphasis is not on who or what you take yourself to be. The emphasis is, why not be free of who or what you take yourself to be? And that's a deeper, right, challenge as concerns the cultivation of intimacy, of ease of being. It's a deeper challenge.
Yeah, when you don't have the habit of orienting to the familiar. Five senses, person, identity.
There you go.
Cool stories.
Yeah.
You know, neat happenings, breakthroughs.
Absolutely.
Same time, I don't know if it's an art or if it's something beyond the usual processing, where it's not self-referential. I marvel at that because I'm so self-freaking referential.
Well, you're alone in that problem.
Yeah, right.
Jeez.
Oh my God.
You're the last guy in Doylestown that still acts that way.
Yeah. Well, it's just curious that the conditioning is oriented towards, well, first an identity and then search for content.
Those are the same.
Or
yeah,
to relieve yourself of content.
Yes.
You know, like if you're a hoarder, even a mental,
sure,
hoarder,
mental
information
hoarder.
Hoarder.
Yes.
Or whatever it is we collect, whether it's tangible or
subtle. That's right.
And then we, you know, it's on our resume.
Yeah. If we're rescue-oriented, then we collect the injured.
Yeah, that's right. 20 or 30 cats at one customer. He made me repair a television. The cat peed and beat it. And he ate through the board. Just see how quickly situation will run.
This appears to be situational.
Stream of consciousness can lead us.
The consciousness appears to be situational.
Appears to be.
Yeah. Intimacy, in the way that we're referring to it, is a reduction sauce. So, wow. Is presence situational? Fuck no. To be relieved of the, right, the habit, the inertia of situational living, of situational orientation, is a miracle. And that's what the salon is about, right? To discover, to cultivate, to share, release from the myth of situational consciousness. You could say that before you find yourself in a situation, Mike the situation from, you know, Jersey Shore, or in a condition, a situation or a condition, there's this. Irrefutability of availability of so-called present experience. Now, if present experience is felt in the way that it's felt, without the insistence of the subject or the objects, well, then it is pure quality. Present experience is pure quality with no specificity, no subject, no object, no situation, and no condition. And that's exactly what this is, if I may be so bold, before it's anything else. The notion of situational or conditional living or identification is always after the fact.
That's what this does.
Oh. Yes.
Sometimes.
Okay, and sometimes.
And it doesn't depend on it at all.
No, that's another interesting discovery.
We think we need to depend on it.
Well, that's when you have the argument that we've heard so many times that, the human is designed, the mind, the brain, the data is all designed for survival. You're like, we're about to go extinct. It was not a good design. It could not have been designed for survival. It's not working. There's survival and there's survival, right? I mean, you learn to eat, a bunny and then save the mushrooms for dinner or after dinner if they're the right mushrooms. If you eat the wrong mushrooms, you're fucking dead. That's right. So, the argument that says the neocortex, the this, the that, the mind, the da-da-da is all designed for survival, this is bullshit.
Yeah, the informational person that attends on occasion loves to delve into humanocentric.
Yes.
Referential.
Yes.
Inclinations.
Yep. That's right. We know him well.
Without saying who.
Yeah. That's right. You know, it makes you seem very clever and well-read if you have, right, sociological, anthropological, archaeological artifacts and deliberations that grant you the gift of causality. That you know what this is, why it is, how it came about, what's what, and the reason for everything. I mean, like, I'm not worthy. You win. But that's, as you can see, more myth, right? It's the hubris of situational and conditional consciousness.
Could it be like a medicine, though, or a very busy, active, acquiring mind? And there's a certain relaxation that occurs from the catch of the day.
Yeah, sure.
But it's an intellectual catch of the day. In
yeah.
Sense.
Medicine is poison. Poison is medicine.
Too much of it, yeah.
Right? It's all the degree, the measure.
That's right.
The serendipity of...
If you lean too heavily on it...
That's right.
Looking forward to the pause.
Yeah. That's right.
And I'm referring internally, too.
Sure.
The busy scenario... Generating should probably write soap operas, or something.
You have. You've written a million of them and starred in most.
It's like one that turned out well.
I'm hoping you get a letter from the Emmys saying you're nominated. Yeah, right. Of course.
It doesn't seem possible to be freed from whatever's just going to appear and do it however you're going to do it. There's no freedom from that. But there seems to be a huge quantity of freedom available if you just... There's something else other than the individual food.
Well, it brings to mind, some of the neo-Advaita emphases, whether on the false sense of authorship All there is consciousness. Consciousness is all there is. If it's meant to happen, it will happen. If it's not meant to happen, it won't happen. Thy will be done, you know, dot, dot, dot. And, you know, that's a cheap philosophy, if I may be so bold. It's a cheap philosophy. You know, if someone says, oh, the reason there is suffering, right, consternation, is because of the false sense of authorship. And you're thinking, oh, well, now there is such thing as the false sense of authorship, which there's not. And then I'm the one suffering from the false sense of authorship, which you're not. And then the presumption, either by continued association with the guru or meditation, contemplation, or book study, that I can learn to not be a product of the false sense of authorship. And no, you can't. So none of it is true, but the terminology, whether it's neo-Advaitism or, you know, more older, call it, you know, Advaita with a pedigree, with what is it called, a providence,
right?
A painting has to be legitimized that it's called, right? Providence, I believe. So no matter whether it's neo-Advaita or ancient Advaita, once it's, right, rendered in words, phrases, cosmology, it's an object. It becomes an object. And then you become, right, a contrary object to the object of your consciousness. So now there is five of you. There's the consciousness, there's you, there's what appears in the consciousness, there's what you're going to do about things. I mean, you're like, you know, you've got multiple personalities instantaneously from no effort at all. And now you're in time again, right? You're in time and anticipation.
Even on a large scale, cosmology refers to cosmos. Even you're buying into a location.
Yes.
And an interface.
Yes.
That has the senses we're accustomed to.
Yes, and if the explanation, whether it's, you know, Dzogchen, Zen, Course in Miracles, you name it, kind of speaks to you, you know, suits your sense of yourself or speaks to the nature of your experience, the nature of your disappointments and suffering, right? Addictions and recovery. Well, then you're like, aha, I found what speaks to me. So, you know, you wear that t-shirt for a while, and fortunately, hopefully sooner than later, the enthusiasm that you found toward this teacher, towards the teaching, will grow stale and rancid as soon as possible so that you can see that, yeah, no, that wasn't true. Otherwise, we become imprisoned by our own urgency, right, to, let's say, suffer less. That's a tricky one. We become imprisoned by our own urgency to suffer less. Oh, then you're writing checks, right? If you got them, you're writing checks. Or you're, you know, showing up at New Age fairs and selling, yeah, you know, whatever you're selling. Drums, jewels, rattles, and readings.
Sounds like it should be a title of a poem.
Yeah, exactly.
Followed by, don't read this if you're easily upset.
Yeah. We tend to, whatever consciousness is, and thankfully I don't know, we tend to parse what appears in and as consciousness. We parse it. So there are things about myself that I consent to, that I don't consent to, that define me, that don't define me. I'm always like, you know, like a computer system. Or it's sort of, I on or off, on or off, on or off, on or off. And the complexity of a huge strings of on or off creates the mirage that you have an idea about anything. On or off, on or off, on or off. And that is how you could say we so-called spend our time on Earth. Holy shit!
Well, I got one fellow determined to assert a capacity to choose.
Yes.
By venturing in an inquiry type way, saying, "Now there's something must have happened before that choice, Can you really own that?
Yeah.
Can you really say that's yours?
Yes.
Or is this like something...
Doing itself.
Just so dynamic.
Yeah, right.
And for you to claim that...
Right.
Is quite a hubris.
Yeah, yeah. I agree.
And he paused.
You got him.
For at least a brief moment.
Right.
Tom James.
Oh, well.
Because he's a very language, the world created by... And then the person... asserting language in the field.
That's right.
That you can evoke desirable.
He knows exactly what this is, and he's studied it well.
Yeah, like in a way, the secret nonsense. I say nonsense because I started reading a little bit, and it doesn't even have a spiritual draw. It's just material. It's
perfect for the material world.
Yeah. It's secular, get more.
Well, it goes...
Forget what you want.
Thankfully, it funnels back into what is freedom.
If you're caught up in that...
Everything, if you're paying attention, if that's your, predilection to pay attention, will funnel into that. What is freedom? Let's say I grow my hair back. Or whatever it is.
Get a tattoo.
I think I want.
That's going to take some serious power of attraction.
Oh, well, I've been really working it. Yeah, I keep putting it out to the universe, and the universe is like, just a fat bald guy. Stop supplicating me.
That's freedom.
Yeah.
I'm just a fat bald guy. Oh. That's freedom.
Yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
I drive around a lot.
Yeah.
I do this, I do that. That's
yeah, generally I have nowhere to go, and I'm not very nice. Fuck you, and,
It's freedom. Here's a Teflon nature to just not having to look into the story around what I should do, could do. Just doing.
That's yeah.
Done.
It always has.
It's free.
Yeah.
There's a freedom in the doing happening.
Oh, sure. Yeah. If you need to say that much about it.
It's not the kind of freedom that says, if I just work it right, then I can get the doing to happen this way.
No, that's not freedom.
That
no, that's conditional imprisonment.
It's complete
bondage. It's just the I is not so assertive.
Yeah.
It's just a phenomenon.
You're served a plate of food for this life, just fucking eat it. That's it. Eat the food you're served.
Okay. Well, consciousness, once again, if there were any, one of the ways it snookers itself, fools itself into relevance. Through spiritual or secular conclusions. As if there are causal chains or relations between the imagination of one thing and the imagination of another. That's another form, if I may suggest, situational and conditional imprisonment.
Uncle.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Uncle. Tap out. If you think you need to be free, well, you've just signed a contract that says you're not presently free. And not just the word free, but the anticipation, the attraction, the instinct of free is also another object.
More like a noticing of how free it is.
That could be very valuable. Yeah, right. Sure. I mean, that's, you know, if you're running a good salon, that would be the gift. How free is it? Pretty fucking free. Yeah. It's just great, you know, if the myth or the urgency of some kind of reference that requires your attention to do something about, if that relaxes, what? What is there to do about anything?
You're kind of watching it happen.
Sure.
And it just happens with a signature and a stamp that looks like what I think it means.
Yeah. That's right.
It's going to crack up. It keeps happening.
Yeah. You don't need no yoga. You don't need no Kashmiri Shaivism. You know, for all I care, Ramana should put some pants on. Stop walking around in a fucking diaper. Put some pants on. You know, put on a Western shirt and a hat and boots. We'll go out line dancing with the peacocks. We're so easily, you know, seduced by one or other form of celebrity or uniqueness or mutantism. I mean, does this intimacy, does this presence, is it beholding to Dzogchen, to Advaita, to Kashmiri Shaivism, to the Course? Is this beholding to any of this shit? The Hindu shit, the Buddhist shit, the Judeo-Christian shit. I won't say the Islamic shit because, you know, there's a fatwa in every closet. Do I have to believe what Zoroaster suggested? I hope not.
See, it is like, again, there's a large population that has a certain way of identity. And that identity is like the door, and it's locked, in a sense, from opening out beyond itself. And the key being whatever the individual is predisposed to being attracted to as the opener.
Yes.
If they dare cross the threshold.
Yes.
And lose the self that was creating all kinds of desires in various directions. To go through the door, the few things you described seem to be like a doorway more than another selfing process. But recognizing that,
yes,
oh, there's this population and this thing is sort of like that too. And there's a door and there's a key and there you step through it.
Well, that's the challenge. The challenge is, here's present experience. Wouldn't it be relieving, if not profoundly relaxing, that we did not have to adopt cosmology, authority, history, the written word, the Bible of any kind, nothing. There's no intermediary between this and this. There just isn't any. So why do I need someone else's ideas or authority or war stories?
To distract from...
Yes, it's all diversion. It's all distraction. That you could be a purveyor of this, this, or that philosophy? Oh, fuck off.
Yeah, it kind of detaches oneself from the immediacy. Foolish that's presenting itself. Like the third person at that Journey concert way back when.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, this is freaking great. I can't believe I'm here. Shut the hell up.
Just be here,
it's happening.
Stop talking
right
and just... Just
right,
go into bliss and leave us alone, would you?
There's the lead guitarist. I mean, just shut up.
Yeah.
But it's like that.
I can't believe it.
Or, oh, why couldn't it have been me? You don't get it, or you do get it. There's still that, the activity that comments, you know, the narrator.
Yes.
Or wants to slip out by bringing up some mental image.
Yeah.
You know, picking up the cell phone. Oh, I better Google it. Wow. Oh, shit, I'm getting close to it. I better Google it. Wow.
One of the other ways, and there are so many, of course, you know, no one's written a really good book on it yet, hopefully never, that consciousness fools itself into being other than itself is, right, acquisition strategy. Like, for instance, if I'm at the concert and I'm in the front row and this is beyond, right, rock and roll heaven, I don't know how to cope with it. So I just start, this is unbelievable, this is great, you know, it's just acquisition strategy. You could say that it's a subtle form, just to be, you know, weird about it, it's a subtle form of diversion again. Diversion and denial. Because the actual, if there were an actual relationship with presence, and here it is, it has no authority, it has no cosmology, it has no causality, it's got nada. And then once, can we just say the nervous system, you know, learns how to get used to that. So that you can relax from the habit, which is a diversion and a distraction, of acquisition consciousness. You don't need to acquire this.
Now you might be accused of being an anti-capitalist. Right?
That's
the
right.
The economy's dropping down. People aren't buying shit they don't need as much. Shut the hell up. You're affecting my business adversely.
Well, yeah, right.
No, I more power too. To that whole track. My goodness gracious.
Presence, intimacy, referencelessness, relaxation from causality and cosmology and solution is this. It's just this. It's euphoric.
Big, pretty box with both. Never quite. It's easy to just miss it looking for something else.
Very easy to miss it and go looking for something else. Yeah, to try to validate, right, or seek nourishment from something other than now, something other than here, something other than this. Acquisition consciousness. Perpetual acquisition.
Completely hooked on Starbucks bacon egg bites. They're delicious.
Good to know.
I'm sitting there eating it. Instead of just eating it, like the hand wants to reach out and Google the ingredients list for Starbucks bacon egg bites. Why can't I just sit there and just eat it?
Yes.
And I did, but I was aware of that impulse, like I wanted to Google it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Sunshine, bacon egg bite. Life couldn't have been any better.
No, not in that moment. Are you kidding?
It's like the mind wanted those fucking ingredients.
Yeah. Yeah.
My taste buds are like two thumbs up, man. It didn't even.
So you, we can see if we're willing to look. We can articulate if we're willing to see the distractible nature of acquisition consciousness, which of course you could say has been, I mean, it's always been exactly what it's been. You know, with, you know, handheld cell phone wireless technology to get an answer from God, Google as God. You know, an interesting NYU professor wrote a book recently and was interviewed on Ralph Nader's weekly podcast, talking about Google, Amazon, Facebook, and I forget the fourth one, but the giants, Apple, thank you. And he drew some really frightening, insightful parallels about how we have turned to you know, these technologies, well, as a surrogate for God.
They're the cat's meow if you want to enjoy this. Perfect if you want to avoid this. It's
yes.
It's available 24/7.
You yes.
You can have it right by your bedside.
Yes.
It's just right there.
Right.
You can spend your life with your nose in your fucking phone.
Many of us do and are. And the price of, let's say, privacy is a price that we think is not that high to pay. So this, you know, the, can we call it the momentum of acquisition consciousness has, dare I say, always been present, if we can pretend that there's a past that we could draw conclusions from, right? And the technologies are enablers of that, you know, that reflex, of that instinct. Because under the beautiful sunny sky, eating a perfectly delicious bacon bite is great, but not so great that it becomes completely immersive. So I have to know more. I have to learn more. I have to package. I have to maybe figure out how I can make these at home if I could figure out what the ingredients were. Yeah.
I didn't think of that.
Well, so you see, the nature of what we call referential or anecdotal consciousness is acquisition-based. It's temporal. It's greedy. And in a way, by indulging in it, you know, not so easy to get out of it, by indulging in it, we malnourish. The fee for remaining under the influence of acquisition consciousness, the fee is malnourishment.
And the solution that is just right in hand is more acquisition consciousness. Go for the next.
Yes.
Teaching, the next.
Yes.
Training, the next.
That's right. Yeah.
More acquisition.
Self is time. Self is body. Self is acquisition. Self is storage. Self is bracing and anticipation, prediction. The law of attraction. It's incessant. It's insatiable.
Kind of adorable, but it's not the whole experience.
Yeah. Yes. Yes.
You can't fight it. You can't, like, oh. Actually, you kind of like that. Like, oh, yes, a project.
Yeah, I love a good fight. That's right. Yeah, that's right. Turn me into a project so I can, you know, dig my fingernails deeper into your spleen.
It brings me back to the more and other thing.
Uh-huh.
You know, you don't have to fight it. You don't have to do anything with it. Just, what else is here? What's here that really is free?
Yes, of course. You know, there are many cogent and practical, let's say, strategies to recalibrate or reorient one's present attention. And they have some utility for a while.
Is it a strategy to be ultimately strategy-less? That sounds like another strategy.
Well, sure. If you have, one has a goal in mind that you can articulate and then imagine that you can inhabit it, yeah, that's, of course, a strategy. That's other than now, other than here. It's a vehicle of, you know, fate.
I mean, it wouldn't even be accurate to observe someone having a tantrum and assume they're not free. Because they may be unattached at all to that they should or not do this or that. It's just the moment. But the judge over here might be making a case, you know, just yes. myself, and reading it completely upside down and inside out, like, no, no, freedom or peace or ease from this endless, driven, identified nature looks like this, and it doesn't look like that, mm-hmm. and that's bullshit.
Yeah, if you or one has an idea about anything, you have an idea about something. And it might solicit or suggest, you know, a form of preference, attraction, aversion, agreeability, disagreeability, what's happening, what's not happening, what you should, could do about it, instantaneously. All of this springs forth instantaneously. And to see that, to take notice of just how instantaneous the movement of context, content, situational, conditional circumstances are that are suggesting a response from you, measured or otherwise, is always after the fact. Our commentary on whatever presence is always hallucination. And the movement of that hallucination and all the ways that that hallucination is, let's say, attractive or just habitual, well, you could say that all of that contributes to the myth, the mirage, the frustration of a sense of self. The pertinent and continuous individual. Where is freedom from the myth of one's own consciousness, the myth of one's own memory and habits to be found? Right now. Oh, yeah, you're right. Yeah, no, that was all made up. With the, let's say, relaxation of the somatic field, so that you don't need to prove anything to yourself any longer. You don't need to reach a conclusion. Get it right. Have causal confidence. Oh, you're done. You're toast. Right here, you're just absolute toast. If you leave this alone, it will leave you alone. If you fuck with it, it will respond in kind. Right?
The mirror.
Absolutely. That's fun, right? There's no delay, is there?
This is urgent.
Yes, in a mirror.
Urgent. Oh, this is easeful. Oh, yes.
Ha! That's right. You want it's
in your mind.
Yeah.
Is it useful or urgent?
Yeah.
I need to know.
Yeah. See? A mirror is non-dual in that there's no delay. You could argue the delay might be the speed of light. Right? But the speed of light, the short distance that one looks in a mirror is not discernible. So there's fundamentally, you know, no delay. The mirror is no delay. Whoa. Whereas what we refer to as consciousness or self is all delay. Made of delay. In the mirror, whether it's the physical mirror where you're grooming yourself to your heart's content, or the spiritual mirror, right, of revelation. This present experience is the spiritual mirror of non-dual, no delay, revelation. And if one's lucky, then the mirth of identity just comes crashing down. in that regard, in that respect, maybe we learn, you know, through repeated encounter, right? I mean, you don't become a great brain surgeon the first time you go in there. Through repeated encounter with the relaxation of mind and acquisitive consciousness, you glimpse the profundity of referencelessness. Then, if you're lucky, you give yourself permission from time to time to revel or rest or abide as in referencelessness. That's simple. You don't have to study Kashmiri Shaivism.
That's the invitation.
You can do Ashtanga Yoga, but you don't need to. This is already unconditioned. It's never been conditioned. So it's not like you have a long ways to go from here to here.
Physical and mental hygiene, I dare to say, has some utilitarian purpose in that if the body is not happy, it's going to have urges that will keep you from a place where you can explore that you're not at. You say
basic hygiene, if yeah. you're lucky enough to come by it.
Like mental and physical is popped into my head. If
you have the good grace to benefit from basic hygiene, mental, physical, somatic, spiritual.
Yeah, and that's what I was thinking of with the yoga and,
yes.
you know, whatever practices.
Absolutely.
A diet that doesn't cause
yes.
irritation.
Yes.
Or neglect. Constant.
Yes. Whatever. There's no bridge necessarily
between
the diplomatic cultivation of basic hygiene and the impersonal invitation to the ineffable. Some people are attracted to various kinds of hygiene from a material point of view. To look, to feel good, to attract a partner, to get ahead in the world, to whatever. You know, to be exercised and have low body fat and, you know, low heart rate and great whatever. So rah, 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 sis, boom, bah, you know, count me in.
Yeah, and that would be more emphasizing the identity than it would be easing the impulses, but not to any extreme, like,
right.
like an ascetic or...
Yeah, yeah.
Or a contract,
right?
You know, where you indulge or neglect.
Yeah.
But those. Can
yeah, indulge and neglect is too much. You're too busy.
Right. Right.
Because this is. It's a very simple. This? You mean this? Yeah, exactly this. Where are you going? Oh well, I'm a fakir. I have to, you know. I have to do this, or I have to not do that. I have to avoid this. I have to have more of that. Experimenting. It creates, you know, fetishized consciousness.
One thing that I do like about a Buddhist notion of the middle way. Because,
yeah.
again, you're not shooting for the stars and you're not digging tunnels or whatever. you know, to any dramatic extreme. Whatever you do, just, you know, do it. But if you do it with that fervor, you know, you're going to find that it's going to feed on itself. And then just that locomotive will forget it has brakes. Holy shit, there's a bend ahead. What are we going to do? Yeah. Anyhow, it's a funny thing.
It's refreshing, though.
Oh, my God. If I could just do it 24/7, you might as well give me ambrosia. That's all I eat.
You are ambrosia.
Yeah, right to the dreamy mind. Of a place better than this. That quickly. One step ahead of this.
As the yoga, whatever yoga, matures or deepens, then the primacy of ambrosia rises in the attention field, palpably speaking, not imaginarily speaking. Presence, the textural presence of ambrosic bliss. Volume goes up in the attention field. And consequently, the habit of selfing, borrow Paul's phrase, or acquisition consciousness, the volume goes down. Take out your codependency volume control, and you just turn it way the fuck down. That's an essential element of the equation. Because if I remain in mind, I'm negotiating and bargaining and valuing and comparing and contrasting. I find agreement and disagreement and all manner of, right, distraction. So the codependency volume control is up too loud.
That layer still occurs, but just doesn't seem to have the dominance in your field.
The ambrosia becomes more and more dominant of its own accord. And your job, which is no job at all, is to take notice of that. Which you can't ignore anyway. Yes. That's the gift. If someone comes to a meditation program and has a good meditation, right? I would suggest, I might be mistaken, that what a good meditation is the palpable presence of ambrosic sensibility, ambrosic palpability, and the busyness of a mind trying to negotiate and process is that's the mark of a good meditation. I mean, a good meditation could also be, I've been having a problem, I've been running it through, I have a solution now. It's a financial solution, it's an emotional solution, it's a strategic or logistical solution. That's another good meditation, right? Problem solving meditation. But the real good ones, the ones that you're like, whoa, that's when the ambrosia is high and the codependency is low. And that's not a psychological condition.
It's visceral.
Yes, absolutely visceral.
Body.
Yeah. Yes.
That was an experience.
Well, yeah, they're good. The conscious relationship, conscious, palpable, textural presence of ambrosia, non-specificity, freedom from psychological time. Oh yeah, that's going to make a mark. That's going to leave an imprint. You're going to like, whoa, that was some nice shit. And organically, yeah, you're likely to want to return to it when you're ready to return to it if it's not too threatening.
5 seconds and thirds, please. With extra work.
Yeah, that's right. Someone like Ramana says, you know, abide in the self with the uppercase S. He might as well be saying, man, the ambrosia is good tonight. Who knows? Maybe it comes about that by becoming fond of the presence of ambrosic consciousness and the willingness to cultivate it in whatever ways, right, come to you. Who knows? It might be the case that you someday fall through the rabbit hole, right, into the revelation of ambrosia, so deep, so profound, so impersonal, so effortless, that the tables turn in that the busyness of mind and identification, which seemed to take up most of the day with occasional visitations of, right, the divine. Now it's like, it's just ambrosia. It's always ambrosia. All right.
The habit of looking can sometimes obscure it.
Yes, sure.
It's only the habit of looking,
yeah,
that obscures it, not the fact that it's absent.
Yes.
It's the habit of what one sees, or is accustomed to seeing, or anticipates seeing.
Yes.
Or dreads seeing, whatever.
Any qualification.
Or bias.
Of course.
Charges that wagon.
What if this were the great simplicity? And all of the, you know, the churning and yearning is turned off. The distraction and the craving liquidate, leaving the great simplicity. And it's so good, palpable, present, that the tendency towards acquisition, acquiring, claiming, putting away a little extra for a rainy day. Go on. Here this is. Here you are. Done. You don't gotta heal anybody. You don't gotta walk on water. You don't have to have a thing to say. I mean, if someone, you know, walks up to you and could use a loaf of bread and a fish, well, you can deliver a loaf of bread and a fish. You know. Out of thin air.
McDonald's fish sandwich.
Sure. Must I reference the memory of my unpleasantness so that I can pretend that I need to do something about something? The fruits of basic hygiene is this. And the, you know, capacity, willingness, permission for this to be more than enough. You leave the cookie cutter, the mold of human behind. The subtlety of ambrosic consciousness, the nourishment, euphoria, does not seek to justify or vet, validate the human jello mold. You're not operating according to time or space, problem solving, justification, healing, forgiveness, or amends. there's nothing other than this being non-specific. Nothing other than this non-specificity. And as there's a natural immersion and obliteration, there's no longer the impulse to characterize. You haven't solved anything. You haven't accomplished anything. You haven't unraveled deep secrets from Shangri-La. You haven't pleased anyone. You sure don't need a reading. Anything that anyone might tell you about yourself, borrowed from the ether, from their guides, from mediumship, from the silent mouth of dead people, it has nothing to do with you.
It does seem to amplify the self.
Of course it does. You are the immeasurability of ambrosic euphoria. Presently. You need a message? You don't need a message. You think you need to know something about somebody else? You don't. Hmm. with the liquidation of self-reference, you do not require healing. Again, at the level of hygiene, right? If there's a disturbance, organic or otherwise, and allopathic or complementary interventions can assist you in suffering less, being out of pain, right? Yeah. Step up to the plate. Sign up. Do what it takes. But with a release from self, you don't need psychological healing.
It's kind of relaxing to accept that what you just described is equally available to what might appear to be a disturbed human being or what might appear to be enlightened human being. Equally available because the identity is it's just a accoutrement. It's a non-essential, even though it seems essential. Human survival thing. Waking up's cooler than being in a mental institution. So the line seems to be really close.
Yeah.
Almost. I tell me the difference.
Yeah, that's right.
Again,
well, the enlightened one's always on time for lunch.
I mean, if you really delve into or go through the door of non-referential,
yeah,
this can be completely nonsensical.
You think?
If you really enter
yes.
it, it's like,
yeah.
What the hell is that?
It is nonsensical.
Gibberish.
Yeah, right.
Without that reference.
Yep.
The playing field becomes less
playful.
Equal. Yeah, playful.
Yeah.
Yeah, that just relaxed the commentator. The one that's still scheming to
yes.
relieve some degree of suffering or busyness or
yes.
intense critical judgmentalness about this, that, and the other.
That's right. The commentator is a schemer. Yeah. You could say it's good emptiness when you don't have any impulse to Google emptiness.
Something ironic about that.
I know.
Anyway,
yeah.
What is it?
It's so good you don't have to Google it. Yeah. A whole week of work, right?
We hit the hour of 9.
We're close. 10 more minutes of delicious fun before it's 9 o'clock.
We usually like clockwork. When it hits that, I'm really ready to do something. Change my position.
I want to change my position.
Like laying down.
Like laying down and chilling in front of
I'm going to fire my broker and change my physician.
Don't accuse me of being a flip-flop.
Well, thanks everyone for joining us this evening. Hope you had as much fun as we did. See you next time.